I was gonna read a sutta, but I just decided to read my heart. And I was reflecting on something I did some 38 years ago when I was 23. And I sailed across the Atlantic Ocean with three other people on a yacht. It was a job. It was a free trip across the sea to sail someone's boat that had to get from North America to Europe. And I was young, very idealistic, adventurous, a bit foolish, and very spiritually inclined. And I loved nature so much. I believed that nature was a great healing force in my life. And I'd been sailing for some time, so this was a wonderful journey to undertake. And I remember being on this sailboat. We had to work very hard. I was the cook. And sometimes I had only canned things to serve up. A lot of the food rotted because we didn't have proper storage. And over a few weeks, you couldn't go shopping and get fresh food, so. But nothing mattered because the sea and the sky and the ability to be so close to the elements made me feel very alive and very connected, very in touch with the core of my being. I'd already been meditating for a couple of years, and I had a great love of silence. So being at sea and having to take turns to navigate also, I learned how to shoot a sextant. I don't think they use those anymore, but we did have a shortwave radio. And at one time we were on the head of a hurricane. We were sailing as fast as we could from a hurricane just beyond Bermuda. The seas were like tall mountains. The waves just carried the boat up to these high, high crests, and then we went crashing down at great speed and lost some of our rigging. And I felt that my life was being held just by a slender thread on the planet, on the boat. If you were to go overboard, that was it. In that kind of a sea, there's no way that the ship could have turned around. We weren't under motor, we were under nothing. We were just being catapulted forward according to the ocean's winds. I remember feeling that with death, such an imminent possibility, and all of us being so, really so helpless, except to tie down all the rigging, batten down the sails and hang on tight and just help navigate the boat and otherwise stay down below. There was so much water coming overboard, so you could easily get washed away. And I had all kinds of visions of being thrust into the ocean and lost. So contemplating death a lot at that time, at that young age, was a wonderful teaching, a wonderful instruction into the fragility of our life, fragility of what my whole being meant. My history meant nothing. The future didn't exist. Time was really very compellingly this moment. So whatever meditation practice I'd been doing really couldn't prepare me for the reality of that kind of slender connection to life and that the very looming possibility of life being snuffed out. The world, I couldn't conceive of the world. The world didn't exist. All that existed was the sea, the storm, the wind, the boat under my feet, and my three companions. We hardly spoke. We were all so exhausted. And I felt a tremendous peace, and just a depth of peace. I can't remember how many hours it took till we were in clear water. And of course there was a lot of nausea and sickness in those kind of seas. But when the seas finally calmed down and we had balance again and some control over the boat, we could raise our sails and reassess our position and try to navigate back on course. I remember feeling in awe of the ability to breathe and the ability to just walk normally on the boat without careening, losing balance, being thrust hither and thither. You have to hold on. That's why when you sail, you're called a hand, because you only have one hand. One hand has to always hold on to the boat. So you only have one hand to work with. It's a bit like being a nun. The way we wear the robe is one hand is always having to hold on to the robe. So you always have only one hand free. That must have been my first introduction to monastic life back in those days. Holding on for dear life, holding on to the present moment, but not really holding on, just holding balance, staying balanced. And at one point, we were listening into the shortwave radio to see if we could contact any country or any place on the planet at all. And wherever you turn the knob, you'd occasionally get a voice from Italy. We were picking up Europe a bit. It'd be Italian and Spanish and French and a few, all these different languages meant nothing. It all seemed like a kind of ludicrous babble. Made me think of the Tower of Babel. It was just psychobabble. Different radio announcers advertising things, and it all seemed so meaningless. The whole world seemed really small, petty, and trivial compared to the enormity of the sea that stretched forever, and the sky that stretched forever, and this tiny little boat bouncing on the waves a bit more calmly, and the breath going in and out of my lungs, just like the breathing of the sea under the boat and the occasional dolphin or even whale oozing out of the ocean into view and then dipping back in quite graciously in their silent ballet. This sense of the elements is a very important reflection for us as meditators too. If we can connect to the elements that the body is made up of, and if we can look with mindfulness at the breath, with enough perseverance and attention on the breath, so that we see the breath not as my breathing or my story, or be caught up with the memories and thoughts that spill out of the breath moment by moment and drag us back into the psychobabble of the world, then we come to a place of tremendous spiritual awareness. Right here in our own little ship, in the body of our own breath, in the sea of our own life, we can experience this kind of depth of profound connection to what we really are, which is not of the body and which is not of the elements, but awakens in us through our ability to be fully aware in an impersonal way through our understanding of what it is to be still and seeing, still and hearing, still and connecting to the universe and to our ability to know the universe in the present moment without any story, without any history, without any projection into the future or clinging to the past. Fully present, fully letting go the personality view. I am so and so, and I was born in this and this year, and I am educated or uneducated, young or old, large or small, male or female, doesn't matter, without any personal viewpoint, but only this impersonal viewpoint based on present moment, full mindfulness, and wakeful understanding, then we die physically, mentally, historically, personally. We die to the story and open up into something much vaster. And we see that we are just like a wave on that sea, connected to every other wave through the element of water, connected to the wind through the breath, connected to the sun through the heat, the coolness of the mind element, of the knowing, of feeling, of what we experience, to these elements themselves. And in that we find a real rest and refuge, a refreshment. We feel totally alive. And if we were to die in the next moment, our mind would have touched something so pure that then death would be like an awakening. A waking up. But then there's the whole world of thought and all our habits and all the things that we're attached to, our relationships, our work schedules, our problems, our worries, our self-inflicted suffering, or the suffering that we feel other beings or other conditions are inflicting on us. It's very important when the world impacts on us while we're meditating or in daily life, that we find a way to come back to that point of connection and remember it. Remember it so we can keep returning there even in the midst of the worst storm that may hit. Whether it's a sickness or a kind of trauma, whether it's an abusive situation or some terrible worry, some situation that we have to resolve and we don't know what decision to make. So if we can just come back to that complete letting go the story and connecting to the breath without any personal investment, got to get something out of it, or wanting it to be a certain way. Just being with things as they are. Breathing in, breathing out. And knowing the body, impermanent, death-bound, not to be believed in. The world is not able to teach us this, is it? Think about the madness in the world right now. And how difficult it is for us to find that point of connection when we get caught up in the madness. Before coming here tonight, we had to run some errands. Was it in Home Depot we saw all the Halloween costumes? And some kid said to Sister Nimala, "It's not Halloween yet." One thing you can know, as long as we're caught up in thinking, in the thoughts of the mind, and believing the mind, and launching into samsara to find that happiness that it can never offer us, then we're just putting on one costume after another and dancing on the stage of life and not really living what we are. We're not living the truth of our humanity. We're not growing in wisdom as long as we believe in whatever particular costume we're wearing. How much am I invested in these robes? The holy life is like a complete peeling away of all costumes. And the robe, in the way that we use it, is meant to undress us from the play of the world and from the false things that the world asks us to believe in and put on. So to take off every mask that we constantly try to wear, like when you look in the mirror, how do I look today? That's investing in the body. In the monastery, we don't have mirrors, except when we shave our heads. It's very hard to shave in the beginning. Without a mirror, you end up cutting yourself a lot and bleeding. Then when you get old and you have shaky hands. But it's okay to surrender, even to suffer, to go through hardship, to endure what might be hard, because one is climbing the highest mountain for the most sacred treasure. And it's worth working hard for that. The world is always offering us what comes easy, and that doesn't seem to give the real happiness we want. So even though wearing this robe, I just have one hand free. I give my life to live in this way, renouncing every day what is good to renounce and give up, because that frees me to make my mind more and more empty and available for true stillness and connection, and strive ever and as hard as I can to hold to and incline myself to that until it just becomes the natural place of abiding. That's the birthright of each of us. It isn't only for those of us wrapped up in robes. Each of us has the potential to realize that place of non-suffering. The voyage to Nibbana is a tough one, and it requires enough courage. It requires incredible courage. If we practice and dedicate ourselves in the right way, if we purify our hearts and minds, we can really experience freedom.